The Speaker of the Nova Scotia House of Assembly grants permission to record the televised proceedings of the legislature for use in schools and for other purposes, such as private study, research, review, or newspaper summary. Television and radio broadcasters may make use of recorded excerpts of the televised proceedings in their news or public affairs programs for the purpose of fair and accurate reports of proceedings. Program material may not be used for political party advertising, election campaigns, or any other politically partisan activity. Program material may not be edited for use in promotional material by any political party or other organization, and may not be used in any edited form that could mislead or misinform an audience or viewer, or which does not present a balanced portrayal of the proceedings in the House. Video program material may only be used with its original audio components, and no other audio material may be added to video material used. Any other commercial use or rebroadcast of these proceedings requires the express written approval of the Speaker.
Order, please. We'll now begin with oral questions put by members to ministers. The Leader of the Official Opposition.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is to the Premier. Mr. Speaker, we now know that there is a big omission in the Limitation of Actions Act, namely that it denies victims of past sexual assaults the right to seek justice from the perpetrators of such crimes. The Minister of Justice blames her own department. Just yesterday in this House, she said, and I quote, "The statements I made last week were made based on the facts and information that I've been provided from my department." Mr. Speaker, those facts and information she is referring to include the very basic fact that four other provinces have enacted exactly this kind of legislation to ensure past victims maintain their legal rights and ignores a Supreme Court of Canada decision that does the same thing. So we'll ask the Premier. The Minister can blame her department all she wants, but when something goes so seriously wrong in his government, who is ultimately responsible?
The Honourable Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, let me say to the Leader of the Conservative Party and to all members of this House how proud I am of the Minister of Justice as the Minister of Justice. Speaker, she brought forward a piece of legislation, Mr. Speaker, that built on a previous piece of legislation and improved it, Mr. Speaker, made it stronger, included more people. Mr. Speaker, as we said yesterday, there's been information that's been brought forward. If that bill needs to be amended into the future, Mr. Speaker, we can amend that bill then.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Well, Mr. Speaker, apparently no one in that government will take responsibility for such a serious error. Mr. Speaker, I'd like to remind the Premier of the doctrine of ministerial responsibility, which is, and I quote, "Ministers are individually responsible to Parliament for their actions and those of their department, including the actions of all officials under their management and direction." Mr. Speaker, in defending herself, the Minister of Justice said yesterday, "New information has come to light now that I've asked myself to look into." Well, Mr. Speaker, that new information was provided to the Minister by the member for Inverness 2 weeks ago and raised in this House repeatedly in debate, in committee of the whole House, in a motion to recommit, and on third reading. Worst of all, Mr. Speaker, victims of sexual assault had to take out an ad in the newspaper to get the government's attention. How can the Premier defend the minister and her department when they acted so incompetently, when it is so clear that they missed something as fundamental as the ability to defend the rights of past sexual abuse?
The Honourable Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I want to thank the honorable member for the question. I want to remind all members of this House the fact that the piece of legislation that was brought before this House had built on a previous piece of legislation, has improved it, has made it stronger, has improved, Mr. Speaker, that piece of legislation. If there are changes that are required into the future, Mr. Speaker, we will make those changes, Mr. Speaker. Unlike the Conservative Party, Mr. Speaker, that for 8 years sat on a flawed piece of legislation, Mr. Speaker, and didn't do anything about trying to improve the lives of those people.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Mr. Speaker, the fact of the matter is there is a gigantic hole in this bill, and the government knows it, and it's the result of incompetence, and the minister is responsible, and the premier defends it. But worst of all, Mr. Speaker, victims of past sexual assault will have to wait till some other day because the government will not take responsibility for its own incompetence on this issue. So I'll ask the Premier, why wait till the spring? There is a perfectly good bill to fix the problem today in this House. In light of the mess that they made of this, why not do the right thing today and pass the bill that we have on today's order paper?
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, let me assure the Leader of the Conservative Party that I don't need to look to him to do the right thing, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, it is this party, Mr. Speaker, that has stood with Nova Scotians time and time again, Mr. Speaker. We have said from the very beginning, we'll look at the information brought forward, we'll assess it, Mr. Speaker, and we'll do it, Mr. Speaker, in the fullsome of time. And if that bill needs to be amended, we will amend that piece of legislation going forward. We stand by that piece of legislation, Mr. Speaker. They voted against that piece of legislation, Mr. Speaker. They were prepared, Mr. Speaker, to let victims of sexual assault be left behind, Mr. Speaker. We weren't.
The Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question through you is to the Premier. Mr. Speaker, today Nova Scotians got their first look at this Liberal government's much-anticipated tax review. During the release this morning, Laurel Broughton, former Ontario Liberal Cabinet Minister, stressed that the recommendations in this report are for a government to broaden consumption taxes. And Mr. Speaker, in layman's terms, that means putting the HST back on many essentials for which there are now exemptions, like home heat, children's clothing, books, diapers. So, Mr. Speaker, my question for the Premier is this. Are there any of these essential items his government is not considering charging the HST on?
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, we just received that report this morning as a government, Mr. Speaker. We're going to be like all Nova Scotia interests. We're going to get an opportunity to read that and assess the entire report.
The Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I want to remind the Premier that on the 7th of May, 2013, in this chamber, the Premier read a resolution asking all members to support keeping the provincial portion of the HST off electricity bills in Nova Scotia and commit to not putting it back on in the future, which I will table, Mr. Speaker. And that resolution was passed unanimously in this House. So my question for the Premier is this. Can he please explain why his finance minister is now publicly contemplating breaking his promise to this House by adding the HST back on home electricity?
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I want to remind the Honourable Member, the Minister of Finance just received this piece of information. They received the report today. Like all members of this House, I would hope they would look at the report, they would analyze it. The Minister of Finance has said no such thing that the leader of the NDP party is just saying. It's completely inaccurate and false.
The Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party on her final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, when asked at the press conference, the Minister of Finance would not rule that out of order, Mr. Speaker. The tax review also recommends reducing income taxes for the highest earning Nova Scotians in this province. Executives at Nova Scotia Power, the president of our universities, in fact, the Premier himself will benefit from this tax cut if enacted. So the report recommends Nova Scotia's poorest seniors who receive the guaranteed income supplement and the income tax refund will be asked to pay more in taxes, Mr. Speaker. So I want to ask the Premier, can he please explain how tax fairness will apply in this equation?
The Honourable Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, we will take the report. We'll review the report. It will become part of an analysis that we do as we move forward, Mr. Speaker. But I do want to remind all members of this House, Mr. Speaker, that the New Democratic Party went in power. All cabinet ministers got a tax cut under their provisions, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Inverness.
Questions for the Minister of Justice. Last week in the media, the Minister said that legislation that removes the limitation of actions for all survivors of sexual violence doesn't exist in any other part of the country. Mr. Speaker, we know that it exists in Ontario, BC, Saskatchewan, and Newfoundland. My question, did the Minister misspeak, or is she honestly saying that she never knew about it until yesterday?
The Honourable Minister of Justice.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and thank you to the Honourable colleague for that question. Listen, we all feel for victims of sexual assault. I'm very sorry for what the victims have gone through. No one should have to go through that. The legislation we passed on Friday is a good legislation. It takes a significant step for victims of sexual assault. We are eliminating limitation periods altogether for any claims involving sexual assault. This is a good piece of legislation.
The Honourable Member for Inverness.
Mr. Speaker, maybe the Minister found out yesterday when the victims of sexual abuse put an ad in the newspaper. The Minister is now aware that there is legislation in the four provinces that abolishes the limitation period for victims. She knows it can be done because it is done in four provinces. I say it should be done today. Mr. Speaker, what is preventing the Minister from giving victims in Nova Scotia the same rights as victims in Ontario, BC, Saskatchewan, and Newfoundland?
The Honourable Minister of Justice.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and thank you to the Honourable colleague for the question. And I realize he's put forth another amendment for today. As I said yesterday, and as I will say now and will say again, I've committed to this House and I've committed to the public that we will explore and examine the information that's before us. We will explore and examine the amendment he's provided, and we will do the right thing once we've had an opportunity to examine that documentation. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Inverness.
Mr. Speaker, why should we believe that? We have been saying this for 2 weeks now, and the government refuses.
Order, order, please. The Honourable Member for Inverness has the floor.
Well, Mr. Speaker, the Premier's voice can stand for today. We'll see how he votes. On November 14th, I asked the Minister of Justice if she was aware of a 2005 Supreme Court of Canada decision where the province of BC sought to recoup damages from Imperial Tobacco for harmful effects of tobacco smoke. The Minister did not answer. Was the Minister aware of this case before the November 14th question, or did department staff do their homework only after I raised the issue?
The Honourable Minister of Justice.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and thank you to the Honourable colleague. Listen, we've got nothing to hide here. I stand by the legislation that was passed, that had been... We have been upfront to the House. We have been upfront to all Nova Scotians, and we're dealing with the information that has been received by us in the last few days. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Inverness.
Mr. Speaker, it took a newspaper ad by victims of sexual assault to get the attention of this government. They wouldn't listen to it. And the government's now questioning who paid for it. They paid for it themselves, Mr. Speaker. Their voice couldn't be heard in here, so they had to buy a voice in the newspaper. On October 30th, second reading of Bill 64, the Minister of Justice said her bill put Nova Scotia in line with many other jurisdictions in Canada. Among the provinces the Minister cited as adopting modern legislation were Saskatchewan, Ontario, and BC. Three of the four provinces that have abolished time limits altogether for victims of sexual assault. Did the Minister of Justice not read or investigate the limitation legislation from Saskatchewan, Ontario, and BC before suggesting them as models that should be duplicated in Nova Scotia?
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I want to thank the Honourable Member for the question, Mr. Speaker. I want to thank the honourable member for the question, Mr. Speaker. We brought forward a piece of legislation, Mr. Speaker, which was intended to protect and ensure that we improved and made access, Mr. Speaker, for people of domestic violence, which the Conservative Party voted against, Mr. Speaker. We know that every piece of legislation that's brought forward, if it needs to be improved, we can make it and improve it, Mr. Speaker. But unlike, Mr. Speaker, the members of the Conservative Party, who don't get their own way, Mr. Speaker, they throw up their hands, Mr. Speaker, and are looking for some conspiracy theory. The fact of the matter is, the minister has brought forward a good piece of legislation that had improved a previous piece of legislation, and if required, we'll improve it in the future.
The Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question through you is to the Minister of Finance. Mr. Speaker, today the government received recommendations from a tax review they commissioned a year ago. Unfortunately, the report recommends targeting middle-income earners, seniors, and young people, Mr. Speaker. One recommendation is to eliminate the Seniors Provincial Income Tax Fund. Earlier today, the minister indicated there was no recommendation she was not open to exploring. So my question through you, Mr. Speaker, is this. Why does the minister think it's fair to ask Nova Scotians' poorest seniors to pay more taxes?
The Honourable Minister of Finance.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And I shouldn't be surprised that the member opposite is cherry-picking from a report that we've just received today. Mr. Speaker, this report is complex. It is comprehensive. It has a myriad of recommendations, and we're going to be taking our time to look at it, to see how it's interconnected, and to talk to Nova Scotians as well, Mr. Speaker. Thank you.
The Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party.
Thank you very much. Well, now we're going to have a study of the study, Mr. Speaker. The Tax Review Commission by the Minister also recommends that Nova Scotians be taxed more on family essentials, including home heat, children's clothing, diapers, books, shoes, feminine hygiene products, and first-time home buyers. Nova Scotians are already struggling to make ends meet, and the last thing they need is to be charged more for necessities, Mr. Speaker. So my question for the minister is this. Why is she considering more taxes on the essentials Nova Scotian families need the most?
The Honourable Minister of Finance.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And the purpose of the review, Mr. Speaker, was to bring some simplicity and fairness to what is a very complex system we have right now. It has come about by successive governments, Mr. Speaker, of all stripe, bringing in little changes in each and every budget that's brought down in this House. We wanted to bring some sort of clarity to it all, and we asked Laurel Broughton to please go and do that review. I think now it is really incumbent on members of this House to read that report and to understand what's been presented, and then we can have a fulsome discussion.
The Honourable Member for Inverness.
Speaker, my question for the Minister of Justice. After the 2005 Supreme Court of Canada decision was brought to the Minister's attention, on November 14th, it appears she got details about it from her staff. Since she referenced the case later on that day in third reading, she had made no mention of the case before that date. In fact, she told reporters that retroactivity existed nowhere else in Canada and would be unconstitutional. Did the minister have any concerns about her position on Bill 64 after she was made aware of the Supreme Court of Canada case?
The Honourable Minister of Justice.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. I want to make it clear to the member opposite and to everybody that this is a good piece of legislation. There are no holes in the legislation, as the member opposite is suggesting. It's a good piece of legislation. It's one that enhances the current Limitation of Actions Acts that were there previously and have been there for a couple of hundred years. It is there to protect victims of sexual assault. We have already said and will say again, given the information that we have received, we will ensure that we review that information, and if necessary, we will make the appropriate amendment. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Inverness.
Mr. Speaker, if it's such good legislation, why didn't the minister consult the member for Cape Breton-Richmond, who just 2 years ago stated, and I'll table this document, from an article stating that the province has refused to do away with statute of limitations. The member for Cape Breton-Richmond said, for a lot of these people, they're going to be statute barred. That's the problem. Many of the people that were here today are adults. It's very clear they're certainly beyond the statute of limitations. He went on to say that a minor amendment by the Justice Minister would fix the problem, adding the government is perpetuating the abuse by not acting. Mr. Speaker, that member is a lawyer. Why didn't she consult the member from Cape Breton, Richmond, to make this legislation the best piece of legislation that could be made?
The Honourable Minister of Justice.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. I cannot speak to what the member opposite is asking me to speak on, because I have no idea what his question is referring to. Well, I'll have a chance to look at that later and be able to respond at another point. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Chester St. Margaret's.
Mr. Speaker, yesterday I asked the Minister of Community Services about her decision to cut the funding to Camp Reachability. There was some misinformation contained in her response, which I think requires clarification. For example, the minister claimed, and I quote, it has been there for 2 years, and I will table that. The fact, Mr. Speaker, is that Reachability took over running this camp 4 years ago, and the camp itself has been operating since the 1980s, serving a variety of youth, including youth at risk and young people with disabilities. Mr. Speaker, it is clear the minister doesn't have all the information, so I have to ask her how she decided this wasn't an efficient use of government funds when her department hasn't even met with the organization to review this year's program.
The Honourable Minister of Community Services.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The fact is Reachability took over the camp in 2012, so they've actually had it for the last couple of years. What I do know is that for $527,000 for 8 weeks in which people get 1 week of camping, I know that if you put an adult from a Boys and Girls Club or Big Brothers Big Sisters in front of a youth at risk, there will be an advantage to that every day, every time, just not for 1 week. When we have scarce dollars, I am all about making sure that we spend our scarce dollars on the best possible and most sustainable outcomes. And we found, and I agreed with my staff, Mr. Speaker, that this was not the best use of this money because it was limited in its scope and it did not have long-term positive effects for the people using it.
The Honourable Member for Chester St. Margaret's.
Mr. Speaker, the Minister should check her facts again. They run programs, a music program that's on an annual basis, along with a leadership program. It is not just a camping program in the summer. And perhaps Joanne Harrod, a mother from Hubbard's whose son has special needs, can better express to the Minister what this camp does. After some troubling experiences at other camps, she sent her son to Camp Reachability. As Joanne wrote in a recent letter to the minister, kids all over this province go to the camp every summer to experience the fun, the independence, the making of new friends, except those kids with disabilities. They'll get to stay home next year because our minister obviously doesn't think they are worth it. Mr. Speaker, will the minister reconsider her decision, knowing the impact it will have on families like the Harriets?
The Honourable Minister of Community Services.
I truly believe, Mr. Speaker, that 1 week makes some difference in some people's lives, but I also know that putting money back into the transformation for services for persons with disabilities makes a longer-term, more impactful statement, so that when Mrs. Harriet's child grows up, that they are in structured workshops, that they're in the community, that they're living in community-based options that they've chosen, that we've reinvested this money into, that children who are at risk and living on the peripherals of the neighbourhood actually have an adult in front of them 365 days of the year, every day, every time. That is good use of taxpayers' money, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is to the Premier. The government's tax report that was released today says that the government is not collecting enough income tax revenue because the labour force has shrunk, Mr. Speaker, and that's true. But rather than recommend ways to create new jobs in the province, like, say, onshore gas development, the report says that they should raise the HST and put it on things like diapers and children's books, Mr. Speaker. So I ask the Premier, will the Premier rule out new HST taxes today and instead focus on job creation to solve this problem, like onshore gas development?
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I want to thank the honourable member for the question. I'm going to do like anyone should do, is take the time to read the report that goes forward. I do want to ensure the honourable member, though, that job creation is on the forefront of this government. We're very proud of the $2 billion investment in the offshore. We've recently just seen Shell get a new partner. Very proud of the work that's happening at Donkin, Mr. Speaker. I don't know if the members there are against good jobs, Mr. Speaker, in rural Nova Scotia. I want to talk to the member about what's happening by Vulcan that's looking at creating jobs in Guysborough County. Not to mention, Mr. Speaker, something very near and dear to you, Atlantic Gold, the job creation that's happening in the resource sector across this province. We're going to continue to work with the private sector to drive job creation, no matter, Mr. Speaker, how disappointed the leader of the Conservative Party may be that we are actually moving this province forward.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Mr. Speaker, what I'm disappointed in is a government that makes promises that it can't keep. So the Premier hasn't had a chance to read the report from today. That's fine. But I hope he's had a chance to read his own Liberal campaign platform from the last election, which says, and I quote, that the government will, direct quote, maintain all current HST exemptions, and I'll table that page from the Liberal campaign platform, Mr. Speaker, and just ask the Premier, does he intend to abandon his campaign promises and actually put the HST back on children's books and diapers, or is he going to keep his campaign promise as I just tabled it?
The Honourable Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I want to thank the Honourable Member for the question. I want to thank all members, Mr. Speaker, across this province who helped work extremely hard not only to build that platform that Nova Scotians believed in and were inspired by. Mr. Speaker, and again, I want to thank those Nova Scotians who put their confidence in our government, and I again want to thank all those Nova Scotians who 13 months later are still working extremely hard with this government to move this province forward, Mr. Speaker, instead of listening to the doom and gloom coming from the other side.
The Honourable Member for Sackville-Cobequid.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. We've learned that the Valley Regional Hospital in Kentville is facing overcapacity phase 2 level, Mr. Speaker, and that's not a good level, Mr. Speaker, to be at. The emergency room currently has 7 admitted patients waiting for a hospital bed. Many of the hospital beds are now filled with people waiting for home care or long-term care placement. So I'd like to ask the Minister of Health, with the Health Minister's delaying the introduction of his continuing care strategy till next spring, what is the Minister's immediate plans to ensure that Valley Regional Hospital will not need to cancel surgeries due to a capacity issue this winter?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And I want to convey to the Honourable Member and to the House that periodically, many situations in our regional hospitals will get a spike, and sometimes it takes 24 or 48 hours in order to deal with such a situation. In fact, when we take a look again, not just at today, but over the past 12 months, it's one of the areas that has made considerable improvement in reducing the number of seniors and people waiting that are in acute care beds waiting to go to a nursing home. Tremendous improvement from 30 down to now usually 9 or 10.
The Honourable Member for Sackville-Cobequid.
Mr. Speaker, that's cold comfort for those patients waiting in the hospital who need home care or long-term care placements. An 80% increase in just 6 months, so it's not a 24-hour issue, Mr. Speaker. When the Valley Regional Hospital faced capacity issues in 2007, the Kentville Advertiser reported that patients were transferred to Soldier Memorial, causing capacity issues there, Mr. Speaker, and I'll table that article. Can the Minister tell us which hospitals in the province are approaching capacity, and what is his plan to ensure emergency rooms are not overcrowded with patients waiting for hospital beds?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. What the member talks about is, in fact, a reality in our province, that our regional hospitals are generally working at capacity. When I visited Valley Regional this past Sunday, I was on one of the wards where there were, in fact, 3 or 4 beds that were available for patients. The member opposite knows very, very well that the hospital setting is always a dynamic one, And I know that this situation is temporary and will need to be addressed, however, on the side of making sure that we have a continuous flow of patients that need to go to the transitional care, restorative care, and this is happening across the province. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Pictou East.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is for the Minister of Finance. Mr. Speaker, it will be apparent to everyone that Ms. Broughton's pollution tax is little more than another Liberal carbon tax. In fact, the term carbon tax actually appears in the document at least nine times. On two separate occasions, Ms. Broughton quotes Stefan Dion, the author of a famous carbon tax scheme. Ms. Broughton says, the former federal Liberal leader knows better than most that a carbon tax, while good public policy, makes for challenging politics. So my question for the minister is, does the minister agree with Ms. Broughton and Mr. Dion, is a carbon tax good public policy, yes or no?
The Honourable Minister of Finance.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and I really appreciate the opportunity to discuss in general what's in the report today. And I think what's interesting for all members of the House is that it is a complex, comprehensive report with a lot of information, a lot of evidence, a lot of research, and a lot of recommendations. And I would hope that the member opposite will join with all other members and read the report. Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Pictou East.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And indeed, it is a comprehensive document. But what I'm asking today is for the minister's personal feelings, which I'm sure she has. Ms. Broughton writes that pollution taxes, or carbon taxes as they're better known, are excise taxes on environmental pollutants or on goods whose use produces such pollutants. So this equates to a tax on pretty much everything. So will the minister confirm today that she will not follow Ms. Broughton's advice and introduce a risky carbon tax that will raise the price of everything?
The Honourable Minister of Finance.
Mr. Speaker, I've already said that we just received the report this morning and that we are going to take our time, read it, and study it. But I also know that there is a revenue-neutral aspect to these taxes and that they're needed to be seen in their entirety, all of the different changes, and that is where the complexity comes in. There's a lot of moving pieces if you look at the tax system. And I would hope that complexity is not lost on members of the opposition. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Pictou East.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is for the Premier. In opposition, the Liberals called the NDP efficiency tax a carbon tax, and they fully opposed it. At the time, the now Minister of Energy quizzed the Premier of the day, saying, "Have you explained to your Cabinet colleagues how increasing power rates, including the carbon tax you opposed just days before the election, is making Nova Scotians less competitive and is a job killer?" That was the now Minister of Energy. So my question is, does the Premier stand by the Minister of Energy's belief that a carbon tax, like the one being proposed by Ms. Broughton, will make Nova Scotia less competitive because it is a job killer?
The Honourable Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I want to remind the Honourable Member we've just received that report. I do want to tell you what really does hurt the province is that we have members of the legislature who continually want to be on both sides of the fence, Mr. Speaker, but there's one thing I want to be very clear to that member with. This party, this Premier, will deal with Pictou Landing and clean up Boat Harbour and not do what the Conservatives did, which is make a promise and not deliver.
The Honourable Member for Pictou East.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I appreciate the Premier's enthusiasm. Today we're talking about a carbon tax, which is a subject he does know a little bit about. Because during the 2008 federal election, the current Premier was asked about Stefan Dion's risky carbon tax scheme. And the Premier said it was up to Dion to promote his plan and affirmed, "I am going to be selling my own vision for Nova Scotia, and that will not include a carbon tax." And I can table that. And during the same campaign, the Premier also said, "I have come out not in favour of a carbon tax." So my question today is, now that Ms. Broughton's review has been completed, will the Premier confirm that a carbon tax is still not the way to go for us?
The Honourable Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I want to thank the honourable member for the question. I'm glad to see that he's doing some reading. Mr. Speaker, I want to tell all members of this House that we just received the report from Ms. Broughton. As the Minister of Finance has said, we will look at that report in its totality, and we will then make assessments as a government to move this province forward. And in his preamble there, Mr. Speaker, he talked about taking an opportunity to communicate a vision for this province, which we communicated, Mr. Speaker, and Nova Scotians responded in such a resounding way. I'm very pleased to be sitting with a majority government in this province.
The honourable member for Chester St. Margaret's.
Mr. Speaker, as all members of this House are now aware, the Minister of Environment has an ongoing pilot program in Western Region of the province. This pilot program prohibits inspectors from investigating allegations that come from anonymous sources of third parties. It seems odd, Mr. Speaker, since other jurisdictions like British Columbia, and I'll table that, encourage anonymous tips and understand that many circumstances require witnesses' identities to be protected. Can the minister please explain what research his department has done on the benefit of anonymous reporting in other jurisdictions?
The Honourable Minister of the Environment.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and thank you to the member for the question. with respect to the question that she asked, around anonymous complaints coming through, I want to assure the member opposite and all members of this House and all members of the public, Mr. Speaker, and you in particular, that when there's environmental issues, particularly large environmental emergencies, such as the case with the scenario that you mentioned with British Columbia for oil spills and so on, Mr. Speaker, we still receive those responses and respond accordingly. In fact, just earlier this year, Mr. Speaker, there was an environmental incident that took place that was under the jurisdiction of the federal government, Mr. Speaker, but it was our department that was contacted. It was our department that responded, Mr. Speaker, because we respond when environmental incidents and emergencies take place in this province. We respond quickly, we respond efficiently and effectively. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Chester St. Margaret's.
It would be nice if he would really answer the question. Mr. Speaker, we heard last week from the Minister's staff that at least 20 incidents in the Western region haven't been investigated because of the Minister's new rules. I can only imagine that number will be far greater if the Minister decided to roll this out across the entire province. I would like to ask the Minister, Mr. Speaker, when will he be reviewing this program, and in the interest of openness and transparency, will he commit to making those results public?
The Honourable Minister of the Environment.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. You know, I appreciate the credit being given to me, Mr. Speaker, by the member opposite, indicating that this is the minister, that is my policy being rolled out, when in fact I encourage that member opposite to just turn her head slightly to the right, talk to the former Minister of Environment, her seatmate, because in fact, Mr. Speaker, this policy started under the previous government 2 years beforehand, Mr. Speaker. In fact, Mr. Speaker, this particular policy, Mr. Speaker, was brought forward to the executive team in the Department of Environment before I even took on the position as Minister of Environment, Mr. Speaker. So I encourage the member opposite to talk to her colleague and find out what exactly led to this move. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Pictou East.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is for the Minister of Energy. In discussing her Liberal carbon tax policy, Ms. Broughton writes, getting energy prices right involves extending motor fuel taxes, which are already well established and easily administered in other countries, to other fossil fuel products, such as coal and natural gas. So for all the times the minister has stood in this House and declared victory for reducing power bills, how does the minister feel hearing that Ms. Broughton's recommendation will be to stick another tax on power bills?
The Honourable Minister of Energy.
Mr. Speaker, I really do appreciate the question. What I will say is I haven't even seen the report. I've seen the title of it, and I have been in meetings all mornings, and it is amazing to me that this party stands and complains about getting a response to a fracking report that we took 11 months, with chapters being released one a month for 11 months, and yet now they want a response to this report in an hour.
Honourable member for Picknow East.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Just for the benefit of the Minister of Energy, I will tell you that Ms. Broughton recommends extending taxes that are already on motor fuels to fossil fuels such as coal and natural gas. And I know that is something the minister knows about because he had quite a few debates in this legislature complaining about the NDP's carbon tax and how that was a bad thing. So carbon taxes were a bad thing back then. My question for the minister today is quite simple. Will Ms. Broughton's recommendation of a carbon tax increase, will it increase the cost of electricity if you put a carbon tax?
The Honourable Minister of Energy.
Mr. Speaker, I'm hearing so much about the report today. I'm looking very much forward to reading it and joining in discussions with my caucus colleagues and the Minister of Finance. And I look forward to our response in the coming months.
The Honourable Member for Inverness.
Mr. Speaker, we have an important matter before the Legislature to give historical victims of sexual abuse and sexual assault rights to go after the people who did that to them. Mr. Speaker, the member from Cape Breton-Richmond, does he still believe in these rights as he was championing this very cause just 2 years ago?
The Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development.
Well, clearly, Mr. Speaker, the member knows that this does not fall under my portfolio, but allow me to say this. We called upon the government of the day, which was the NDP, to remove the statute of limitations going forward. Our bill has done that today, and I'm proud to be part of a government that has done that.
The Honourable Member for Inverness.
Well, Mr. Speaker, that's not what he said 2 years ago. And I'll table it again, Mr. Speaker. He said for a lot of these people, they're going to be statute barred. That's the problem. Many of the people that were here today are adults. It's very clear they're certainly beyond the statute of limitations. And he also said a minor amendment by the Justice Minister would fix the problem, adding that the government is perpetuating the abuse by not acting. Why the change of heart, Mr. Speaker? This member is a lawyer. He knew what he was saying 2 years ago. Was he being sincere then, or is he being sincere now that he has so far voted against this very measure 3 times?
The Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development.
Mr. Speaker, I spent 14 years in opposition as justice critic, and I make no apologies to the member for Inverness or anyone else for how I fought and stood on behalf of victims of all sorts of crimes in this province. Mr. Speaker, we asked for that limitation to be removed. The Minister of Justice and with her department, 8 years that they worked on this. 8 years. And finally, this government brought that forward, has made that change. We've already committed to looking at what is being proposed. I don't know how the member can ask for any more when we've already committed to doing that. Mr. Speaker, this is legislation that 8 years that government sat on it. We brought it forward, and I'm proud of the Minister of Justice for the work she has done.
The Honourable Member for Chester St. Margaret's.
Mr. Speaker, my question through you is to the Minister of Transportation. The other day, the federal government announced that they are divesting their responsibility for the wharf on Little Tankook Island. It is the only wharf located on the island, and it serves as a vital link for people who live and work there. Fishermen use the wharf year-round, and the province's ferry docks there to bring passengers and supplies to the island. Residents of Little Tankook are worried about what's going to happen to the wharf. My question for the minister is, can he assure residents of Little Tankook that the province will take ownership of the wharf and make sure necessary repairs on the wharf are done so it can be continued to be used?
The Honourable Minister of Transportation.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to thank the member for the question. With respect to Little Tankook, the member and I have spoken about a public conversation that we will have before Christmas. I'm going to travel to Tankook and have this discussion with the residents who are impacted. At the end of the day, Mr. Speaker, when the federal government decides to divest critical pieces of infrastructure for the province, we'll be part of that conversation. So it's in DFO's hands now. They say publicly that they have a number of options for how they may proceed, but I can assure the member, all the residents of Tankook, when those conversations take place and it involves the province of Nova Scotia, we'll be there to have those. Thank you very much.
The Honourable Member for Chester St. Margaret's.
Mr. Speaker, I would like to thank the minister for being a good minister and cooperating and working with this member, and I truly appreciate it. Fishermen who use the wharf are afraid it may be condemned, and they won't be able to continue to lay their boats and fish out of that area. So I'd like to ask the minister Can he assure those fishermen that they will continue to be able to use the wharf to lay their boats and fish from that area?
The Honourable Minister of Transportation.
First of all, Mr. Speaker, I'd like to congratulate the member on her very good judgment here in the legislature. Again, Mr. Speaker, this is a conversation with respect to the fishermen with the fuel and the bait that will obviously impact the upcoming lobster season. For us, we have to get those supplies there. So again, I'm meeting with John from our ferries department this afternoon here in Halifax to have the conversation about ensuring that we have those products and the services delivered to Tancook. And again, when we have that public meeting, we'll be wide open to hear all concerns, all issues, and we'll address them as best we can. Thank you very much.
The Honourable Member for Pictou West.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. My question is to the Minister of Finance through you. The government's tax review recommends increasing the small business tax rate by 5% to 8%. In an Orwellian turn of phrase, the government says in a press release that jacking up the small business tax is intended to remove disincentive to grow. Will the minister please explain how increasing costs on small businesses with higher taxes will be an incentive to grow?
The Honourable Minister of Finance.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And I appreciate the question from the member opposite about small business and about the economy of our province. The reason this whole report was commissioned was to find ways to stimulate our economy, to help us break the years of poor results. Mr. Speaker, we have had 20 years as the slowest growing economy in Canada, and that's something that we all agree has to change. So the report is before us now with a myriad of different recommendations, looking at how we can encourage growth, encourage job creation, and make a better future here in Nova Scotia for our families.
The Honourable Member for Pictou West.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Every month in the CFIB Business Barometer, tax and regulatory costs rank among the issues small business owners identify as major cost restraints. In early November at the Sydney and Area Chamber of Commerce, the Minister of Finance committed to not raising taxes, and I will table that newspaper article shortly. Well-known Sydney businessman Marty Chernin is quoted in the same article saying, "Like everybody, I'd like to see lower taxes, that's for sure. I think that lower taxes would create more economic activity here and therefore more jobs, and it would certainly increase the revenue in the future." Does the minister intend to break her promise to attendees of the Sydney and Area Chamber of Commerce and increase the small business tax to 8%?
The Honourable Minister of Finance.
Mr. Speaker, I think that particularly the party to which the member opposite belongs has said repeatedly in this House that we have the least competitive taxes in the country. And in that regard, I think we do agree that we have very poor taxes in terms of the overall. So what I would ask all members, including the member opposite from Pictou West, to look at this in its entirety and to consider it. Our government is going to do just that. We've just received it, we're going to read it, and we're going to consider the very complex issues that are put before us. And not only that, Mr. Speaker, I'm going to speak to Nova Scotians and people in all corners of the province as well. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Inverness.
Mr. Speaker, I've just heard the Premier state and suggest that we are re-victimizing the people that we on this side of the House have been standing up for. Does the Premier really believe that?
The Honourable Premier.
I think, Mr. Speaker, if the member had actually been listening to what I said, as the former member drove around with the former Premier for a number of years, that he could have actually changed legislation, which they didn't, Mr. Speaker. And let me be clear, Mr. Speaker. The Honourable Member,
order,
Mr.
Order, please. The Honourable Premier has the floor.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Speaker. And I want to, again, as I stand here, tell you that the Minister of Justice has brought forward legislation, Mr. Speaker, that has been improving on a piece of legislation. We tell victims, Mr. Speaker. This government has stood directly, Mr. Speaker, with victims of crime at every opportunity that we've had, Mr. Speaker, and we'll continue to do so, and we'll continue to make sure that we improve legislation that reflects, Mr. Speaker, the values of all Nova Scotians, Mr. Speaker, and we will not stand in this House, Mr. Speaker, on any case looking for political points, no matter what the issue may be.
The Honourable Member for Inverness.
Well, Mr. Speaker, maybe the Premier won't stand, but he will sit in his place, he will look me in the eye, and he will tell me that we are re-victimizing. That's what you said. Mr. Speaker, I apologize. I'll direct my comments to you. How can the Premier say that when it is they, the people who put the letter in the paper this week, who are leading the charge and calling for these changes?
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, again, I will tell the Honourable Member I did not look him in the eye. Mr. Speaker, when I did look across and look that member in the eye, Mr. Speaker, exactly what I said to him was that he spent his time driving around with a former Premier, Mr. Speaker, when ensured, Mr. Speaker, what they should have done, Mr. Speaker, would have been working,
please.
Mr.
Order. The Honourable Premier has the floor.
There's a number of pieces of legislation that have been sitting on the Cabinet table through successive governments. We've brought it to this House. We've passed it. We've improved legislation. We've improved the fact that the victims of
order, please. Order, please. Order, order, please. Order, please. We'll give the Honourable Premier a chance to answer the question, and we'll keep... Order, please. The Honourable Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and we will continue, Mr. Speaker, to ensure that the piece of legislation that we bring forward improve legislation, improve the protection for Nova Scotians, and make this province a better place to live, work, and play, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Sackville-Cobequid.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is for the Minister of Transportation and Infrastructure Renewal. Today we learned in public accounts that the Department of Infrastructure Renewal has recently received some project tenders that were over 100% or more over the original estimated cost of the project. Some projects were as high as 200% over budget, Mr. Speaker. So a very easy question for the Minister. Can the Minister tell this House exactly how many project tenders have come into the Department more than 100% over budget?
The Honourable Minister of Transportation.
Mr. Speaker, thank you very much, and thank the member for the question. I know the member was very active in the Public Accounts Committee today, asking questions to our department. My understanding from the responses from Chief Engineer Bruce Fitzner was that it would only be probably one in every few hundred of the projects overall of our capital plan, local roads plan, that are over budget. In any instance where that takes place, normally what we do is try to reallocate the remaining, any of the remaining money, if it was under budget or over budget, to projects similar in that area. So for us, obviously, over budget is only a situation where there's extreme circumstances. If it's a bridge structure, if it's something that we're not familiar with doing all the time, then they can be somewhat tough to predict. For the most part, when it's our usual paving, we're usually pretty much bang on there. So any instance that it's over, Mr. Speaker, we try to adjust and make it better for next time so that we certainly understand what we're dealing with. There are challenges with some of those projects, but for the most part, Mr. Speaker, I want you to know that we put our heart into getting the tenders right, and I can assure the member that we'll
order,
continue
please.
To do so.
Order, please. Time allotted for oral questions by members. The Minister's has expired. The Honourable Member for Fairview-Clayton Park on an introduction.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. If I could raise the member's attention to the East Gallery, where Shaney and Lloyd Court are visiting us today. Shaney and Lloyd have been amazing supporters and volunteers in both the Fairview-Clayton Park area and the Clayton Park West area and Bedford. And I would ask them to rise and receive the warm welcome of the House.
The Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. According to the rules of the House, I'd like to rise on a point of order, Mr. Speaker. During question period, the Minister of the Environment indicated that the member for Shelburne had initiated a pilot project with respect to